Say Funky Town Podcast.
Funky Town Podcast.
What?
I say Funky Town Podcast. I say Funky Town Podcast.
Funky Town Podcast.
You're making me nervous. You run around, I sabotage your smile. Stomach your envy. No blade of grass could ever cut my stride. And we're all meant to fall. Just laugh it in the face and we rain on your parade. But you keep on talking. Well, I've got to admit that I got nothing on this one, got nothing on this.
Special edition, on the road edition of Funky Town Podcast.
Beep beep.
That was Vodeo. You're making me nervous.
I'm making you nervous with my driving?
No, that's actually the name of the Vodeo song. You're making me nervous.
That's what a coincidence.
Yeah, because you are kind of making me nervous. No, you're not making me nervous at all. No, I was like, man, I wish there was a new Vodeo song. And I went on to iTunes and I typed in Vodeo and I saw their album and I saw Hey, I'm a DJ. And then I saw a song that was called You're Making Me Nervous. And yeah. I was like, I haven't heard that before.
Yeah.
So.
I'm pretty sure I've heard them play that live in the sets that I've caught by them.
I'm sure they have. It was released this year.
Yeah. So.
It's a good little jam, so that's what you heard.
Word.
Right now, Zach is driving. We are on Barry. The traffic looks good.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. I recorded the second episode of Zachcast.
Nice.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Oh, is it?
It's so bad. Rebecca loved it, but it's so bad. It's like 7 minutes long.
So are you going to put these up? You going to put them on the Funky Town feed, or are you going to get your own feed?
I don't know. I might get, like, record a few more before I think about releasing them. I was hoping to build time. Like, first one was 7 minutes, second one was 7 minutes. I was hoping I could, like, find more content to pad them out, 15 minutes maybe, but it's so hard. Yeah, but
what I found is that people like that short stuff. My little 60-second fishing videos are doing really good.
Oh.
It's because they're just a minute long. People got time for that.
I might put them up someday. Maybe if I record like 7 minutes.
That's a smoke break. You can listen to that on your smoke break.
True.
You can go out there like, I want to smoke a cigarette. Listen to Zach Cass, and I'll be right back.
Well, that's encouraging. But right now we should talk about the Funk It Down podcast.
Oh yeah.
Who are you gonna go see?
Daniel Wright.
Daniel Wright.
The owner of W Durable Goods.
Oh yeah.
So you check out the website?
Oh yeah. The gallery and everything.
I think it's gonna be interesting. I'm not sure exactly what we're gonna do. We're gonna ask him about what he does and about the building that he's in.
Uh-huh.
And maybe how he got started and how he built what he's built up.
All like his stuff is like really neat. Just the little that I've seen is like all looks really, really cool.
Yeah, here, have a free canvas made from a canvas bag that came from World War II.
Right.
Have a free bag that was made out of a canvas from World War II. Alright, we do have a little police section up here.
Yeah, I wonder if it's this directing traffic for the...
Yeah. Oh, so they have... So, traffic update, they have the on-ramp to 35 South at Barry closed.
Yes. And today is Monday, August 27th at 8:55 p.m.
Man, I gotta tell you, so I've been trying to go out of the bubble to see my friends play, go see Dustin a couple of times in Denton, or anytime I leave here, this is what it's like.
Right.
Every time, it doesn't matter what direction I go in, if I'm going north, if I'm going to go to Arlington, if I'm going to go wherever I go, there's right around the Mixmaster all the way,
mm-hmm.
all over here. It's just, there's construction and traffic, and it's just a pain in the ass to get anywhere.
Do you think that you're living in the Truman Show, and they're just trying to make it slower so that they have time to set up?
No, I think it's the universe saying, stay in your bubble, man. Okay. Just go to Magnolia or 7th or Mass or, you know, Shipping and Receiving, or just stay right over here. I never have to
devil on your shoulder.
Yeah, I never have to get on the freeways if I don't want to. I could just hang around, you know, right here in this little... You can get over here without getting on the freeway if wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
But try getting to Denton.
Yeah, right?
So, like, in the night I was coming home, and it's like, I went there, and it was bad traffic over here. So, on the way home, I was like, okay, I'm going to go a different way. So, I'm going to exit. I'm coming back 35 north. I'm going to exit 820 and go around Lake Worth.
Uh-huh.
It's like, screw it. I'll just go around. I'm either going to go down Main, or I'm just going to go all the way around. Well, when I go to exit, they had that exit closed. So, I had to go straight. And then I exited Meacham, and then went all the way over to, I can't remember if it was Henderson or if it was Maine, but whatever it was closed, and they had to detour another area. I was like, oh my god, it took me forever to get home. So,
I noticed something recently. Now, I don't know if you... Have you ever noticed that, like, DFW, the Metroplex, with, like, 30 and 20 and 820 loop looks kind of like a penis?
Yes.
Okay. I was hoping it wasn't just, like,
no, it's
Sigmund
a thing.
Freud haunting me.
No, people have said that it totally looks like a penis. The whole
it does. It looks like a huge ball sack.
It's a little weird. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one. Yeah.
Yeah, but speaking of a Vodeo, I got to talk to Jacob for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Last...
So was it Saturday night?
Saturday, yeah.
At the Hover Last Show.
And Miranda Lights.
Yeah, their album release, Tink Tank Tina.
Oh, yeah.
Man, they had... I've never seen a crowd like that at Mass.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a crowd like that at Mass?
It was really crowded. I was trying to kind of compare, like, it was... I think it was a little more busy than the, Ansley's release.
Okay, yes, it wasn't at that, okay.
Yeah, I think Arenda Light was releasing an album, and it was Huffer's last show. I think, like, those two aspects together.
Well, that, and Tink Tank Tina played, so they made an all-age show.
Yeah.
So when you have an all-age show, you have a whole nother group of people that are coming that don't ever get to go to shows.
And that's the way to go, man. I want to throw all age shows, because I like kids.
Yeah.
Kids know how to enjoy music. Not that adults don't, but...
No, I was telling a buddy of mine, I was like, man, I was like, this is really good for the scene, but I really like being at a club and there's like 30 people there. Oh, yeah. All 30 of us are like really digging on the band and the band's loving playing and everybody knows each other and we're just all having a good time. I was like, but that's not really that great for the band or the business or anything. This is what you want. This is what you want for your band. This is what you want for your bar. So, you know, but I was like, oh, I'm a little crowded. I'm kind of claustrophobic.
You want a birthday party.
I guess, yeah. That's something, you know. No, because I mean, I really want the scene to be, you know, popping like that, but but that's what it's going to look like. And then after a while, it's like, man, I'm not really going to want to go to these places because it's always there's a line to get in the door. Yeah, we got to wait in line.
Hopefully,
you know?
it'll.
I was like, I haven't had to do that in a long
time. So much that should I turn? No, I can't turn there. Hopefully, it'll continue so much that mass gets more and more business, more and more money, and then they add on. They just build a whole second half of the building, and then it won't be so crowded.
Okay. And then one day they'll take over the milk plant.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be a it'll be a musical complex. Or every
I've
show's
got
like
a musical complex.
Every show's like a... Every show's like a festival. No, it was cool. It was fun. Man. Everyone was there.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Joe. He wasn't.
Joe went to see Brian Breckenridge.
Did he go? Because I saw Brian Breckenridge. So. But I saw him at Mass. He was at Mass. Did you see Brian
Breckenridge?
Yeah. We talked for a long time.
Sorry about that.
I thought you were going to run that red light.
No.
Start playing. You're making me nervous again.
Should be right around here. He thought I was going to run that red light, too. I think it might be... Well, this is the macaroni coming. Oh, there's the sign.
Oh, so it's in the
That's
macaroni.
That's a badass sign.
That is a badass sign.
He's got a neon light sign. Parking spaces. I'll just take two of them.
All right.
We're here.
Guess we'll see you inside.
People ask me, like, how did I get into this? And I tell them, I'm an electrician. Being an electrician, I was hard on my clothing. I bought a sewing machine just to repair my clothes or hem out my pants. All I needed was a zipper bag. And it was kind of odd that I couldn't find a zipper bag. I could find plastic bags or whatever, but I just needed a zipper bag to put my stuff in. So I started making my own little things. I had three home sewing machines, and I broke all three of them. So after that, I bought an industrial sewing machine. And after buying that machine, my brain kind of exploded, and I thought to myself, this, I can make anything. I just kept challenging myself to make new things, more things. You know, stuff that I used in my work, but stuff that I used just for my own personal life. I started sewing out of necessity. It was just a needs-based thing that I was doing, and the brand just developed out of that. W Durable Goods is just it's a brand of simple items that does what they're supposed to do, you know, and don't fail you. Those things become like trusty companions that you wouldn't part with for anything. I tell people that sometimes when you buy a product from me, the first day is the worst day, but it only gets better from there. You know, because after 10 years, after my product has got some scratches on it and it's broken in, you like it better than you did the day you bought it. And if somebody asked you for it, you know, and you wouldn't sell it, it's been through some journeys. It's been here and there and everywhere. And that's how products ought to be. To be really frank, I'm not doing anything new, but I'm trying to do it better. My name is Daniel Wright, and I make durable goods.
that. So we made it inside. So we're in the shop. This is a cool shop. So you're part of the macaroni building.
Yeah, that's kind of called OB Macaroni, and they made macaroni in here, well, pasta, for almost 115 years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It is cool. You know, I remember, because I know that I recognize the brand. I mean, I've seen the boxes of the macaroni and stuff. So inside of your shop, do you have a lot of it is what you made, but I guess everything isn't, you know.
Cause yeah, no, we just, I mean, we're trying to be a supplier for the stuff that other people don't do in Fort Worth.
Uh-huh.
So I want to carry stuff. It's a small market, granted, but it's the things we carry nobody else carries. Yeah, we carry new products like the stuff we make, and maybe like some new stationery, pens, that kind of thing, even like some personal care products. But we just, the emphasis is like, you won't find it anywhere else, mm-hmm. you know, and it's good stuff. It's like, stuff you want.
You have the beard oil and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Well, some of it, I know that we talked to you, was it at Friday on the Green? Is it that or is Arts Goggle? I don't remember which.
Yeah, one of the two.
We came to your booth. Yeah, and you had some like satchels and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you find the material, or like some of these things are like really old, like from World War I or two.
I mean, we try to find, if I can source it in a decent quantity, I'll buy large lots of like vintage fabrics. And some of it's, you know, sometimes you get really lucky and it's from like from the 40s, you know. But then other times, you know, you might find some cool stuff, but it's from the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Discontinued fabrics, you know. And yeah, part of it is, I mean, some people may think of it as being eco-friendly, and that's fine, but I mean, I think of it as being just uniqueness, mm-hmm. and generally speaking, it's good stuff to use.
So like, when you find the fabric, do you know what it's going to be, or do you just go, oh, this is great for fabric, I have to get it, and we'll figure out something.
I have no idea what it's going to be. Yeah. I'd usually just buy stuff. If I find something cool, like an odd lot, even in like webbing or something, it doesn't have to be fabric. It can be like hardware, trim, stuff like that. You know it's good stuff, and you'll figure out a purpose for it later. Like, I don't have to know the answer right now. So,
but it's like you have sewing machines in here, so like you do all the sewing and
yeah, everything. We do all the manufacturing for our own brand. Yeah, yeah. A lot of what we do is private label manufacturing. So we actually do a lot of stuff behind the scenes that you generally don't see on Instagram. Mm. You know, it's like some of it's not cool. Like some of it's fun. But it's just like not Instagram worthy or whatever. But I mean, we have the machinery to do it. A lot of people come to us because they have a design. It's not, you know, they don't. Nobody has the machinery, you know, in their house to do this kind of stuff. But yet they can't send it off to like China or Mexico because the minimums are so huge.
Right.
So sometimes we can like kind of meet in the middle and do that for people. So that's all the stuff that goes in the back half of the shop. Yeah.
Are y'all ever like working whenever people come in?
Yeah. No, I mean that's the great thing about
like
here.
Working about being like sitting at the thing. You know,
oh yeah.
Doing the
that's the advantage of being in this shop because like our other shop it was like very divided, where you had like the front retail space and then there's like a wall and then there's like our sewing in the back, but here, it's all one space, and it really makes it easier to run. And people get it more here when they come in. Like the other shop, we were like, hey, we make everything in the back, you know, all the sewn products, and they're kind of like, okay.
It adds authenticity.
Yeah. Well, it just, you don't have to explain everything.
Yeah.
You know, like it's good when things are made, I don't want to say made obvious, but, you know, you don't always have to say it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is everything that's out for sale, or some of it just for the aesthetics?
Pretty much everything's for sale. I mean, the stuff like behind my work table or the, you know, the fixtures aren't for sale generally.
Mm-hmm. Unless bicycle hanging from New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, I'll sell anything if the price is right. But I learned early in our first shop, we would sell some fixtures and then get into big trouble because I sold it for a reasonable price. But then it wasn't enough money to just go out and like buy something to replace it immediately.
Oh.
Right? So I learned from a guy who's been in the business for like 20, 30 years, and he said, like, your store fixtures, you need to put like a ridiculous price on them. He goes, because it'll never cover the cost of having to go out and buy one immediately. And he said, if somebody wants to buy it, fine. He said, but you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot.
So that's kind of your look. That's your store, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's yeah.
Part of the identity. If you can't put it up, then.
Yeah. I mean, but we carry an assortment. You know, if somebody has interest in something, you know, we'll talk about it.
And so, do you make blue jeans?
We don't.
You don't? Okay.
Yeah, I did make. I mean, okay, I've made myself a couple pairs.
Are they hard to make?
Yeah, when you're like, our machines just aren't set up for it, you know. So, like, technically, yeah, I can make anything I want. But, like, once you set up these industrial machines, like, you can't just go back and forth. Like, oh, I'm going to make garments, and I'm going to do, like, well, sew leather, and then I'm going to, you know, it doesn't really.
You got to kind of stick with one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you a lot more efficient. So, I mean, while I could make clothing, it's probably it'd be the most inefficient thing in the world. Okay, yeah. You know,
I was wondering, like, do they have like custom blue jeans? I mean, they have custom suits and stuff. They have jeans actually.
Oh yeah. The best way to do that is just find someone who can take an old pair of jeans apart, make the pattern based on a pair that already fits you, and do it, because there's very few people that can like measure you and make something from total scratch. That takes a lot of skill. That's something I don't know. Like, I can make a pattern from an old pair. It's tedious, but it can be done. Yeah. Tailoring is a whole other world. That's a tricky one.
So how did you get into it, into doing this kind of stuff? Did you like some of the vintage stuff when you were a kid? Or, I mean, like, did you go to school?
I mean, I remember my aunt, she would take me to, like, World War II shows, you know, and, like, they're, like, veterans and stuff, and you'd, like, look at artifacts. And I don't know, I was fascinated with old stuff early on. And even when I didn't dress in a vintage style or even like have any vintage clothing, like kids in school, I remember like in elementary, middle school, they would say like, you're like stuck in a time warp, or like you're like living the past or something. And I didn't really know what they're talking about, but I guess there's something there, because I like living in the past, kind of. I hate the 21st century.
Do you?
I like the technology. I like the modern medicine, right?
There's lots to like about it, and there's lots to not like about it.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of get there. I go back and forth.
Yeah. You know? I tell people, like, traditions, like, you can't live on tradition alone, but it's a really good start. I mean, there's a lot to be learned from old stuff, you know.
No, I mean, I was thinking earlier today, it's like, I don't know how to make anything, but I know people that will make their own table to eat on, make their own desk to work at. Or, and it's, you know, and it's not that hard. You got to have the right tools, you know, and you got to at least have some kind of instruction or pattern to follow. But I mean, you can figure it out, but
you can use it. Yeah, it's a long learning curve. This is probably the longest learning curve I've ever experienced in doing anything, because there's not the sewing industry was started to be outsourced before like the information internet age. So that stuff started going overseas before there was ever any kind of integration with modern technology, you know.
Well, do they have sewing machines that?
So no, there's nothing. I mean, they're all your clothes are handmade.
Yeah.
I mean, in one sense of another. I mean, so a lot of people think like most things you can Google and find out information. Mm-hmm. With industrial sewing, that's not the case.
Oh wow.
You know,
funny,
because it's all in people's heads and brains, or it's overseas. I've actually found some Indian or Pakistani forums for industrial sewing, but it's very tricky, and usually they're talking about large scale stuff, like the places where they make your t-shirts. I mean, you're talking about sewing machines in a factory as far as I can see.
Yeah, I guess you never really think about
and,
that.
And there's people people behind every machine and stuff. I mean, there's even like the cuffs of shirts, there's automated machines that can like do like one step, like a fold and a sew.
Sure.
But it still takes a human being to like put it on the shirt and like run it around finish it. So
I said, wondered if they had like this like a computer on it where you put a pattern in there and then you just hit play, and then the needle kind of does its thing.
That's right. There's no such thing. No such thing. The fanciest machine I've ever seen, it had two machines like end to end, and they were both like on a table that had like gears on it, and it like rotated, but it only made one step of the shirt. You know, I mean, it can't assemble it, it can't finish it, it can't turn it inside out, you know? So, it's really amazing that we get our clothes for as cheap as we do. I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy to think about.
Yeah, because I'm still not really sure how socks are made. Socks always kind of baffle me. I understand if you were to knit it, but there'd be big loops and everything. And
what they call like tubular knitting machines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they look like something from outer space.
Yeah, I bet.
And then, like, imagine every fiber in your sock, like, it comes through like these giant cones, and it looks like, I'm trying to say it so people can understand through my verbally. It's like a funnel that's like 5 feet wide or something. I don't know. I mean, that's for T-shirts, but they also do the same thing for socks. And then they're crazy. There's a company called Darn Tough. They're in Vermont actually, and they're all American made socks. They're very good socks. Kind of expensive, but mm-hmm. worth the price.
Yeah.
And you can go on their website and look at some of the like how socks are. It's pretty crazy.
Now, did you do like any kind of home ec or anything like when you were in school?
No. In fact, that they'd kind of like tapered that off by the time I was in high school. Like
they already get rid of that.
Yeah, well, they had other classes, but wood shop was starting to fade away, and I had like wood shop. But those, I guess, people don't see the value in that kind of thing anymore.
See, I took wood shop whenever I was a kid, and I lived in Canyon, which is right outside Predator, right close to Amarillo.
Yeah.
It's a small 4A school. But in eighth grade, I made a crossbow out of wood. It was a crossbow. I mean, you could shoot. It would shoot an arrow like for a city block. I mean, I made it in school.
Yeah.
You know, it was really neat. It was from a kit and everything, but still, we learned how to whittle ducks. We all had like a little knife. We were whittling, you know, different animals. You just cut out like a real rough form of it, almost just like a Minecraft character. And then you start to round off all the edges and start to put all the detail on it. And you know, and we did that when we were in eighth grade and stuff, and it was cool, you know, but I can't remember any of that stuff now. I couldn't do any woodworking, but I did it the 1 year. I didn't...
Right. Yeah, we've gone totally away from a practical lifestyle of things. I mean, there's a lot of people, like, something happens at their house, they got to call somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know, a repair person. And, like, after wartime, the woman was seen as, like, the keeper. Like, they painted and mended chairs and even did like a little minor carpentry. The women did that in the house, and then now it's like, oh, I'm too good for that or something, when it was, they took pride in that, you know.
Everybody did.
And then
I was like, well, I can just call somebody and they'll come out and do it.
And
sometimes it's cheaper to get your oil changed than it is to change your oil, but still, we've locked, you know. And you can't work on your cars anyways, because everything is computer and you can't even get into it.
But ignorance is like a luxury. Like, we can just be dumb about stuff because we can just pay somebody to do it. Mm-hmm. You know? That's pretty scary.
Luckily, I'm on the lower end of the money scale, so when something breaks, I have to YouTube it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But I've found that I can do stuff. It's like,
You're much more equipped. I always say, like, people that are, you know, the handy people, they'll survive in the... apocalypse, you know. But the people that like don't have any life skills, you're kind of in trouble, you know.
I'm gonna need some YouTube.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I was a Boy Scout, so if everything went down, I can make a fire, I can clean a fish, and so I mean, you know, I can make shelter, like a little lean-to, and I remember how to do a lot of that stuff, so that'd be kind of okay. You know, I don't know about running down a deer and catching it and stabbing it with a knife and then skinning it and eating it. But I can catch a fish and clean it and eat it. And, you know, but, you know, it is weird. You know, and even now we live, because I live here, so we live right outside of Fairmont. So it's just inner city. You know, I mean, I take my kids fishing and things like that, but there's not a whole lot of the country live in or any of that stuff. We don't walk outside and look at the fruit trees and pull apples or see the deer eating in our yard or any of that kind of cool stuff, you know.
That's different.
It is different, but I don't know. I kind of miss that at times, just the small town. My dad lives in Weatherford, and he drives like a 72 Ford farm truck, man, and it is so great. Like, you open up the hood and it's like, there's the engine. It's like, I don't know anything about it, but I could work on it. I could totally Google it or get the Clifton book or whatever it is, and you know, that old stuff, it seemed like it was easier to work on. And
that's true. I mean, we've designed ourselves out of understanding stuff. Like, I think technology doesn't make our lives, really doesn't, it doesn't, nobody's quality of life is better because we have like more technology.
It doesn't seem like it, because we're supposed to have more time.
No, but it doesn't.
We don't have more time.
Yeah.
I mean, time we do have extra, we spend it on Facebook or Instagram in our experience, or we're never really there, you know. So it's like, no, I like all the old stuff, and it takes me back, because I still sit, I'm only 46, but I sit at home and I watch like Andy Griffiths be like, man, I wish I was Opie living in Mayberry.
I try to promote that here.
It feels like we're in a small town, and it's, you know,
I want that lifestyle to be celebrated. Slower pace of life. I asked my grandfather one time, he lived in East Texas, right when the Depression was going on. He was born in 25, and he started picking cotton when he was 5 years old. And like, he grew up, it was poor, you know, but he didn't look back on it like, oh, it was just so horrible. I mean, it was horrible, right, but it was like a kind of relative. He's like, we didn't know any different.
Yeah.
And but he said, you know what, it's just, things aren't as slow as they were back then, you know. And but I you know, this shop celebrates, I always say that my shop and our brand celebrates like the golden era of Fort Worth, which I feel like is like from the 30s to the 60s, which isn't, I don't think it's celebrated enough. And like some of the branding of Fort Worth, it's like talking about like cowboys and Indians, you know. It's like, well, that's like an infancy stage, maybe,
right?
But it's not really Fort Worth in its heyday to me. Like, by the time the 30s got here, I mean, the cowboys, that was something way in the past.
So what was going on in the 30s? Like, were there any gangster stuff here? Was it all just
sure? I mean, there was a lot of odd stuff going on, but you know, one thing that really points out to me that I think it could give you a feel of what was going on in Fort Worth in the 30s was the architecture. There's no other town, because like, there's a lot of cow towns across the country,
especially probably like up the trail, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, up the Chisholm Trail and whatnot, and like big places where the meat packing plants were. But Fort Worth is the only city that I know of that has mixed Art Deco architecture with Western culture, and it works, you know. And I drove by a Will Rogers Center the other day, and the gates, if you look at the ironwork and the gates, it's like so like 30s Art Deco, and there's a statue of Will Rogers right there, and I'm like, this works. This is so cool.
It's the cowboys and culture that they
that's pretty true. So I, you know, the things that we do, I'm like, hey, like, think about, you know, maybe don't, it's fine if you want to go way back, you know, but you know, think about the 30s and 40s and 50s. There's so much cool style and things to remember, and so I like to celebrate that. And I think the Stockyards actually is starting to lean a little bit more toward that, where it's not so much you know, Hell's Half Acre or Honky Tonk,
right?
You know, but it's more of like the you know, railroad and the old cars and cool stuff like that.
I guess maybe even like a little more southwestern than so much western or cowboy western. I like, it's like a, I don't know, it's like, I don't, when I look back growing up like in the 80s and 90s, you know, I was like, all the cars weren't really that great. The new Camaro sucked, and the Firebird sucked, and the IROC Z or whatever. And it's like,
I've never seen a 1970s Camaro in good condition.
Yeah,
it's like nobody really cared. It's like,
but some of those old cars. But some of those old cars are, you know, it's like they really had a sense of the way that they built them and everything. And then everything from like the time period, the men wore suits and they had the hats.
Oh,
and the women had the big dresses.
They didn't go outside undressed. I see women. I hope I don't offend anybody, but a lot of women go out in clothing that women 40 years ago would have been caught dead. 50 years. I mean,
the pajamas at best.
They're in their workout clothes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, that's for working out. That you weren't seen out in public. And there's women that were, you know, they had so much pride in their, not in the arrogance, but they just had a certain self-respect about their appearance, men and women. You know, men wore their hats and they wore their shirts and
women,
they were, a lady I know, she's in her 90s now, but I mean, she worked as a waitress. I mean, she was bottom of the totem pole as far as the workplace goes. She put rollers in her hair every night. She made sure that she had clean, you know, shirt and ironed, you know, and it's just like, well, I wish people, you know, put that much effort into their.
It is nice to see. So I think some, women
did it to impress their man, and I think these days women are like, I don't, you know, I mean, my wife barely even wears makeup, and it's just when we're just doing something special, she'll put it on. But there was a time when a woman wouldn't get caught without her face on, you know, and they would do their hair and all kind of stuff. And I don't know if that was to keep up appearances socially or if it was for their men, you know, to do it.
Yeah,
I like the pride in it. I like the, you know, I get why, like, a lot of women will fight against that stuff because it's like they were expected to. Right. That was their role. They had to find a man. They had to find the good man. And in order to find a man, you had to cook.
Yeah.
You had to be able to clean. You had to be able to make your face up and do all the stuff to where they have a different role these days and they take on a... But I kind of miss seeing the girls in the dresses.
I don't know what the chicken or the egg, but, I mean, both sexes have done it. Mm-hmm. I mean, now men don't care about their appearance and stuff. And I'm just like, I don't know if that's a good... I don't know if that's a good thing. I mean, like, does anybody really think things are getting better because of that? I mean, is our culture any, you know, I don't know. It's just...
No, it's weird. And because I was always the guy that would argue for, I was a hippie. I like the hippies, the long-haired. And so when the 60s came and there was the counterculture, I would have been one of those guys with the long hair going, you know, tune in and drop out and all it was, you know. But they were dirty, smelly, long-haired, not bathing, free love, and that was a totally contrast to everything that had been happening prior to that point, you know. And I think since then, it's all kind of changed, for better or worse, I don't know. Yeah. But I've always found myself in the counterculture, but I still like...
Before you know it, counterculture is the traditional.
It will be.
I mean, you go long enough, you know, like right now, there's a... it's just like fashion, you know. It's like what was not cool. It goes on generally a 20-year cycle.
Sure.
You know, and it's like, well, what was cutting edge, and then all of a sudden it's yesterday, and then now it's the cool thing again. A kid that comes here and helps me sometimes, he said, he was saying, yeah, I'm thinking about like buying and selling like vintage T-shirts and stuff, and I'm thinking like Pink Floyd, like late 70s, early 80s shirts, you know. Like, those are hard to find, you know. He's like, no, like stuff that you may have wore in high school or something. And I'm like,
come on, man.
I'm like, that can't be vintage, like, really? But all of a sudden that's, like, cool again, maybe? Like, I don't know. And there's a market for everything.
I heard Green Day on the Classic Rock Station.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's always weird whenever you hear songs you heard in high school on the Classic Rock Station.
Yeah, that's strange.
I don't think K-Love is a thing anymore. But I think if K-Love was a thing, it would songs that I listened to in high school would be playing on that station now, because it was
like, how did I get here?
In the 80s or whatever.
I used to listen to K-Love when I was a kid, like going to sleep at night, like turn the radio down so nobody could hear that I was playing K-Love. And that's when they played music from the 50s. It was like 50s, 60s, 70s.
Yeah, yeah. So did you like the bebop stuff?
Kind of did. I mean, I don't know. I didn't like anything new that was going on. I did, you know, I was forced to listen to stuff that my oldest sister would listen to. And I think she graduated high school in like 92. Mm-hmm. She was older than me. And I picked up on a lot of stuff that she listened to. But that's the only exposure that I got. Oh, like she listened to everything from
grungy stuff or
some Big Head Todd and the Monsters to Metallica that was going on at that time to Dwight Yoakam, Rodney Crowell, REM, NXS. She listened to a little bit of everything. So I'm thankful for that I got picked up on that. But so that's why my musical tastes too are like all over the place. Like, I like what I like. I don't like what I don't like.
That's kind of the way I am. Yeah. It's like, because I can't really say, well, I don't like country or I don't like rap or I don't like, you know, there may be some that I like better than others, but I like some songs in all the formats. There are some really good rap songs I'm like, I really like this song, or some really good, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm kind of that way too. Whenever the song we're going to play in the middle is, I forgot his name now, but it was somebody that you had sent over. I'm going to do a Vodeo song, and we're going to close out the show with Cutthroat Finches. But the middle one was... he's a country type singer.
Christian Lopez.
No, it was the other one.
Because he's not necessarily local, but
he's not.
He was a standout guy.
Okay, well, yeah. I played his song.
He's local friendly.
Okay. Simon Flory.
Yeah, Simon
Flory. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Is he local friendly?
Yeah, no, he's from here.
Okay, well, that's the
one. Well, he's not originally from here, but he's, like, made Fort Worth his home.
Yeah, okay.
And he's a customer of mine. Real, real great guy.
We take transplants.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, if you're cool, I'll accept you.
But he's playing music locally.
Yeah, totally.
The song I played is, I think it's called I Shall Work on My Songs. Great song, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Now, he has good lyrics. They're kind of funny. It's,
Has
kind of a country blues feel to it.
Yeah, he doesn't take himself too seriously.
He didn't seem like it.
Yeah, which is good.
I hadn't heard of him before, so I'm glad that I kind of got turned on.
Yeah, you know. Well, he's a great instrument player too. So he does a lot of gigs, just hanging out with people and playing instruments for other guys. So not also with a solo act. So.
Have you gone out and seen him play? I guess then.
Yeah, well, I was watching that. He played at Magnolia Motor Lounge. It was a couple of months ago now, but yeah, he's a good guy.
Do you have a favorite venue that you go to in town?
Man, whenever I go, I don't get a chance to see live music that much.
Yeah.
So it's usually just like whenever, wherever happens to be there.
Have you ever thought about doing something in here?
We did, yeah, we want to. In fact,
cool.
We did a So Far Sounds here.
Oh, nice.
We did several of them at our old shop,
uh-huh.
And we did one here. And
now this is actually kind of perfect for that, huh?
Yeah, well, we have a cutting table here. It's like right behind our cutting. Our cutting table is like 12 feet long and 6 feet wide, so it's almost like a stage. And we had the bands play on top of our.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was totally fine because most bands were like 3-4 people at the most. Well, there was like 6 guys in like this jazz ensemble, and they were killer. They were great. They all got up here. I mean, I didn't know there was going to be 6. God, because like, I already told ahead of time, like, hey, y'all can get on the table, no problem, you know. And they all showed up, and I was like, oh, wait, well, I'm not sure if that's okay. And I said, like, I told them, like, just stay in these, like, middle, like, in the center sections is where the supports are. And I'm like, I'll just, like, try to get, like, you know, 2 guys here and then 2 guys, you know, and it was fine. But it was a little bit scary there for a moment. But
no, that's really cool. Yeah, I wonder if there's a video for that. I bet there's a video for that somewhere. If not, there will be.
Probably.
We usually put about videos.
Yeah, no, I'd like to do something. I think we're going to do got to do something, like a live music video. Not super staged, but, you know, maybe while we do an event here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it'd be cool. The acoustics are decent.
I need to work on my songs. I need to get them right so y'all will sing along. For the drunks and the poets, and one for the moms. I need to work on my songs. I need a beat that'll make them shake. I need a melody that'll make their hearts break. Or I could be like Ray Wiley and sing about snakes. I need to work on my songs. When you're sad and you're lonely, you got no one to turn to. Country music, rock and roll, bluegrass and the blues. Well, the greatest songwriters are whiskey, women and the truth. That's right, but you won't find them all in the same room. Tonight, need inspiration. I'm gonna roll one up tight. Sometimes I get so stoned I forget how to write. I need to work on my songs. When you're sad and you're lonely, no one to turn to. You got country music, rock and roll, bluegrass and the blues. Well, the greatest songwriters are whiskey, women and the truth. That's right, but you won't find them all in the same room. Yeah, the greatest songwriters are Hank Williams, 1, 3, and 2.
They're not making macaroni here at all anymore. So this is a brewery next door. Is that what? Isn't something over here like Wild Acre or something?
The deal is, where we're standing right now was originally a one-story structure, mm-hmm. connected to the brick structure, and these were the stables for the horses.
Oh.
That was originally a hotel, and the hotel was around for we don't know how long. We're guessing, could have been like 15 years. Maybe, but the hotel was over there. These were the stables, and in 1899 is when they started making pasta. Okay, and then when they started making pasta here, they expanded. They put two stories on top of here, and they like put sheet metal buildings that way, and then built. You know, so like in the 30s and 40s, they added on. So we do our sewing, manufacturing, retail here. Next door, south of us. The main building, that's Melt Ice Creams. They do all their manufacturing over there.
Oh, that's neat.
And then...
I saw the sign, but I was like, Melt's on Magnolia.
Yeah, you know, right. But they do their ice cream here. And then behind us, kind of catty corner, we share a corner with them, is Craftwork Coffee. They do their roasting there.
Oh.
They also like do their tasting and storage.
Can you smell it in the morning?
I can. It kind of kills us because we smell coffee sometimes when they're roasting.
Uh-huh.
And then at Melt, sometimes like they bake cookies or brownies to put in their ice cream. And so we smell like baked good.
That's, you're like, oh, yeah. Cookies and coffee would be great right now.
And then in their, it's not the oldest part of the structure, but in their old shipping receiving area is Tex Malt. And they make like the sugars, malt, and then sell it to breweries around Texas. So right now it's us four tenants. There's some things in the works for some other tenants that could be really cool. But right now it's just us. Right. So.
Yeah, I think Wild Acre's over here somewhere in one of these old buildings. Mm-hmm.
Wild Acre...
Because there was a dog food plant over here.
Right across the street, actually.
They were there right across the
street.
Yeah,
and it's as the crow flies, it's pretty stinking close. But it's across the...
giant freeway.
Across the highway. Yeah, across the highway, and then like you turn left. Right away. It's right there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And it's a ranch style bean building. Remember that? Was this still here?
That's where, if I'm not mistaken, that's where Wild Acre Brewing
is, that what
is right now.
Really?
Yeah. And they're also putting a bar. Joe Risky is putting a barbecue place back there too. Yeah, mainly as a kitchen for his catering. But then, so things are a lot of things happening around here.
Yeah, and then over the South Main area in back of you, you know, they're still building up. They're putting...
Oh, Main looks totally different.
Yeah.
I mean...
A bunch of different bars and stuff. It's slowly building up over here.
Bearded Lady's moving over there in the old ABC Flag building.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like going to be expanded. It's a pretty good-sized building, so, I mean, I'm excited to see what that happens there. And, of course, like Greenhouse 817, Winton and Waits, and there's another one I can't remember.
The Hop Fusion...
Hot Fusion's down here. But yeah, no, it's really cool. I mean, I'm glad to see...
And the Pirates over there. Pirate mm-hmm. radio station.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I'm glad to see any kind of development, really. I mean, even if it's not my bag, I like to see stuff happening because it's something happening.
Well, there's some neat buildings over here. And they do have a lot of, you know, a lot of history.
Yeah. And then there's a place called going in, like, something Tiki Lounge. Have y'all heard of that?
I have heard of that. What was that? Something Tiki Lounge. I have heard of that.
Well, it's going in right there, like where Main and Vickery is. And behind, they tore down. There was like a furred out wall that they tore down because they were just kind of gutting it and then going to put in new plumbing and everything. And there was an old like ghost sign, Coca-Cola, hand-painted on this giant wall. And it's like been hidden for like 50, 60 years.
Wow.
And it's very cool. And it's going to be in that Tiki Lounge. They didn't know it was going to be there until they tore that wall down.
It's definitely going to be there.
Yeah, no, it's
how cool is that?
Like, I'll go there just to see that sign. It's just, you can't replicate that kind of thing. You know, you can't make something faux aged.
No, because they tried it with some of the downtown buildings where they put up that little weird brick.
And I don't hate it. You
I
know?
Don't either, but it was actually old brick.
Yeah, it's just not the same.
When it first went up, I was like, this is some bullshit. It looks terrible. You know, I've gotten used to it now. It's been up forever. Yeah. But
They tore that one down that was next to the courthouse, the one that was like butted right up against the courthouse. Uh-huh. You know, they tore that one down. And it had like the faux, not the faux finish, but it was made to look like brick. They had like fake shadows on it, which is like, man, whoever did that was like very talented. Like, kudos to them because it looked great for what it was.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of like, I don't know if I like it.
I remember when I was a kid, so like I lived out there, but my aunts and uncles, they lived here. So whenever we would come to Fort Worth, this was like a big city.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we didn't go to Dallas. You know, we went to Houston once, and Houston, I was like, that was a big city. Yeah. But still, when we come here, I thought it was so neat. My aunt would always take me to the library downtown. I was like, whoa, so giant and stuff. And we would go to the Montgomery Ward building when it was actually open, and it was in Montgomery Ward, and we go to the different floors and stuff. It was just, I have really cool memories of being a kid and coming here. We would take the little Tandy subway. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I rode it when I was a kid.
Yeah, because you take it like you go ice skating.
Yeah.
You know, that was cool. Wild. I don't know why they ever stopped doing that. I mean, at some point I don't know. I'm sure that tunnel is still there.
In fact, the train's still there.
And then they have the little because it was on Panther Island, right? With the little.
It's right over there. Yeah.
Where we come up.
You park in the parking lot and then take the subway downtown.
Yeah, you go underground. And they have little shops down there and stuff.
Crazy.
It was cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But yeah, now sometimes I do wish I could travel back in time, you know, and just kind of. I don't know. I guess I grew up because my dad was born in 49 and my mom 51. So all the stuff they grew up with was like, they named me after Jeff from the Donna Reed. No, Father Knows Best, which Donna Reed was in, but the boy's name was Jeff and Mary, I think, was the daughter's name or whatever. So my mom loved that show, so she named me Jeff or whatever. My sister was named after the Bionic Woman, you know.
That's
right. Jamie Summers. That's fun. So we were TV people. But I grew up watching like all that stuff, like these 50s black and white, you know, TV shows, whatever. And so, you know, and even like a Rebel Without a Cause and some of the old movies and stuff too. Anything that had to do with like James Dean or, you know, I just was totally in love with the 50s.
There's always a group of us that get real nostalgic about the olden days. But I mean, it's funny to think though that where we are now, 50 years from now, we'll be all nostalgic about the times we're living in now.
I'm thinking so, but it seems, it seems like everything is so fake and plastic these days to where it doesn't seem like it has the same charm.
I think even more so because things are changing so much.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I listened to a podcast one time about World War I, and it was interesting because, like, especially, like, in the early 20th century, things started changing a lot. Before that, your life was very the same. It was actually no different at all from, like, your grandfather, your great-grandfather. If you lived in, like, the 1820s, your life was no different than your great-great-great-great-grandfather.
Like 100 years ago,
I mean, nothing had changed. And like now, everything's changing very rapidly.
Yeah, very rapidly.
So, of course, you could talk about like people getting disconnected and everything, but maybe they'll look at this time as even be more nostalgic than we're our for.
Yeah.
You know, the 30s, 40s, 50s. I don't know.
I remember back when we had flesh bodies.
Right.
Yeah. That was so weird.
When we were pink and not gray with the big head, the black eyes.
Yeah.
I think that Wall-E, have y'all seen that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody's in there with their giant sodas, and it's like, that's almost a reality in some places.
Yeah. and like, Idiocracy is kind of the same way. Whenever you watch that, you're like, oh, this is almost seems like this could happen for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think, you know, there's so much media and stuff that we get fed, so much negative, you know, whatever. But when you actually walk outside and talk to your neighbors, at least around here, that's my experience.
Yeah.
Things are pretty cool, and I think in the grand scheme of things, things are better now than they've ever been.
I think so.
You know, we're always getting better.
Our consciousness is really negatively influenced right now by like the media and everything. And I always say like my shop, I know that some of my customers are like super conservative, and then I have some customers that are super liberal. Mm-hmm. I don't really care.
Doesn't matter.
It's like we're this is a show about business. I can have my own feelings and mm-hmm. about stuff, but like when it comes to business, like, hey, I got a product and a service, and you want it, and we do business, and it's fine. I mean, I really feel like my shop's like a safe place for like both ends of the spectrum. You know, it's like doesn't matter to me. You know, and I think that's actually a very wonderful trait about Fort Worth. I mean, I've known people that had conversations with people that I talked to a Muslim guy, and he told me, he's like there's big cities, you know, like, well, and he's talking about Dallas. He's like supposed to be like more progressive and more accepting, mm-hmm. and he goes, I'd rather be in Fort Worth with all of its, you know, conservativeness and whatnot. I mean, he goes, people treat me better in Fort Worth than they would in Dallas, you know. And I think that's kind of cool because, like, just be friendly. Don't make it weird. Be chill. And that's kind of what makes the world go around. Yeah. So, and that's what I like about Fort Worth. I think Texas, the friendship state, I think that should mean something. And I think Fort Worth should be, like, a microcosm of that motto, you know.
No, I think you're right. I've always liked that about, you know, our state being the friendship state and stuff, you know. And there's lots of Texas pride. There's lots of, Fort Worth pride. But I think that's why, you know.
Yeah.
And the people here, I mean, yeah, there's bigots and meanies and stuff around town, you know. I mean, they're everywhere. But overall, it does seem like people are pretty much, you know, just kind of live and let live. You just, as long as you're not messing with me, I ain't going to mess with you. We just kind of do our thing.
Yeah. And that's the way it ought to be. And I think when you have, like, agendas going, that you can't do that. I mean, can you imagine if my shop had, like, some kind of, like, agenda? Like, you have to... I was like, no, we're just goods and services, trading money. I'll do trades. I've done trades before.
Yeah.
It's like, I think somebody said, you know, it's like, well, you can't be focused all about money. And I'm like, well, yeah, you can. And sometimes that's not a negative thing, depending on the character of that person.
Sure.
If you're only focused on money, you'll probably make really good decisions. You'll treat your customers good. You'll make sure that everybody's treated fairly. And so that's not but depending on the person's character, that's not always a bad thing.
Yeah, because sometimes they're like, they want the money towards, like, they won't treat people fairly in order to make more, you won't treat your employees fairly so you make a little bit more at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But if you're smart, that catches up with you.
It does catch up. That's what I was going to say. A true businessman knows that if he takes care of his employees, they're going to take care of the customers, which is going to keep on bringing in money.
Right.
You get a bunch of pissed off people, you know, working for you. Nobody's going to want to come in and deal with those folks, you know?
No.
He's got an attitude. He never wants to be, he's not helpful at all. I'm not going to, and the guy's like, I don't care. I make $7 an hour. What do I care?
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And so, you know, but if you take care of them and they're like, I love working here. My boss is cool. I get paid well, you know, he takes care of me. I'm taking care of the place. I'm going to.
Word gets around.
Yeah.
Especially in the information age.
So how did you start? Were you like, did you like just have an idea and like make a few things and then sell them and think, I could do this? Or did you actually like have like a business idea and go out and get a loan and do all that kind of?
No, people say like, oh, it kind of perturbs me, and not like I get offended by it or anything, but people come in the shop sometimes like, what a cool idea. As if like, I was at, up too late one night, you know, hopped up on coffee and I had this brainstorm.
Yes.
And I'm going to have a shop and we're going to make stuff and we're going to have vintage stuff. And no, this was not an idea. You know, this is just what happens when you say yes to like too many things and get in over your head.
Okay.
And then you have to make it work because it's like do or die. You know, I started out just making stuff at home. You know, and really just to recoup my losses from like trial and error so much, I started like try selling Etsy or eBay,
mm-hmm.
and I did like small shows around town, you know, and like people kept buying this stuff, you know, and I'm like, well, now I got to make more. Well, this is crappy. I got to make more stuff so people,
and it's like I need a bigger space.
I mean, because in my house, at one point I had like 4 sewing machines in my house, and I was like, this is like ridiculous. I can't do this anymore. And when my wife and I got married, we moved in together, and then she was like, we can't, this is like getting out of hand, you know, because we were like in the garage, in the hallway, like cutting fabric, and And so we eventually just moved our shop out of the house. And when that happened, like, then you start having to make, like, more serious decisions.
Well, now you've got to pay rent, like, just yeah, in front of the right. building. And
like, your baby steps get, like, when you're doing it in your house as a hobbyist, like, you can make really baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you start to, like, go outside the house and, like, you got a shop, like, the steps get bigger and more daunting, you know? And so basically it's just, I mean, I've tried to let it evolve as naturally as possible, you know, because I think if you, I say this a lot, but I hope people know what I mean. Like, don't follow your dreams. It's like the worst. I think it's the worst advice you can give a kid. But I do tell people, like, keep your dream alive.
Sure.
Like, keep the juices flowing all the way and see if it can take you somewhere. But, you know, so like me, I guess if I followed my dreams, I would just be like an illustrator or some kind of designer for some, you know, frou-frou thing.
Sure, okay. Yeah,
but
yeah.
But you know what? Like, I did some stuff that I liked, and I'm seeing where it takes me. You know,
yes, and
be true to yourself and everything. Mm-hmm. But I'll take it as far as I can go. You know, and that's kind of what I've done. You know, like, there's some things that you got to say no to, some things you should say yes to that maybe you don't feel like saying yes to, but it can take you to the next level. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's kind of like, in short, you know, like, how it happened for me.
Cool.
Yeah, because I've never been one of the persons that has, like, this huge master plan, like, this is how it's all going to work out and everything. Like, for me, that'd be kind of setting myself up for failure or not give you the free. I think if you get trapped in that ideology, you don't make decisions that you should make because you're so focused on this vision, you know, or like, maybe you should do that, you know. So, I mean, it's not for everybody. That's kind of me talking, but
yeah, I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, and his guest was Jordan Peterson, who is for some reason a big enemy of the left, and I don't quite get it. So I wanted to listen to this because it's 3 hours. It's like, I want to listen to what this guy says. But one of the things I took away was, he was like, everybody wants to tell you that you're fine, that you're good, that you're perfect the way you are. He's like, no, you're not. He's like, yeah. he's like, you're not. You need improvement. We all do. Yeah. We need to work to improve. And he's like, and don't go crazy and don't shoot for the stars. He's like, know what your limitations are. He's like, make small goals. He's like, shoot up, you know, reach up, but don't go crazy. He's like, you know, maybe it's making your bed every day. And you're like, man, I'm in my bed every day for a week. So he's like, so what? So you made your bed. But like, that's a big deal. If you, you know, and then once you do that, then you learn how to do the next step, the next bigger thing. And it's just, you get more and more control over your life. And it was just interesting because he wasn't saying, don't try to be better. Right. You know, you should actually definitely try to be better, and don't not go for your dreams, but have it there. But shoot low, you know, and then go to the next, and just then go to the next step. You don't go to the weight room and put it on 400 pounds and start lifting weights. You got to start with like 20 or whatever, and build your way up.
I had a guy, a friend of mine. We became friends through conversation, but he ran a really successful construction company, and he said, They got so big, they were riding that big wave, and he goes, we were running a lot of people, a lot of men, a lot of jobs, and he goes, as soon as that, like, had those little downturn, you know, in the economy, he goes, we were just, it was a disaster. I mean, he was like $500,000 in debt. He just, like, it was bad times, right? And at this time, he was telling me this because at this time, about like a year and a half, 2 years ago, like, I was like in a really low spot in the business. I was like, man, this is crazy. We were, you know, like, things were not working out very good. And he told me this story, and I don't know if people can really understand, but like, I understood it perfectly when he told me this. He said, man, start thinking small, you know. And I was like, I understood what he said, because that's how he got out of his mess. He never had to file for bankruptcy or anything. I mean, he worked his way out of it. He goes, but just think small. Like, how can I accomplish this goal and this goal in business? Like, people, you get too big of a grain of a scheme, it's also more susceptible to big failure.
Sure.
And he goes, just think small and then build on those small, you know, things that are profitable, successful. And he goes, do something really small, but if you do it 1,000 times, you don't have to worry about the bottom dropping out under. Right. Because he was on these huge jobs making big money. And he goes, but, you know, if I'm invested, it's kind of the same principle as like putting all your eggs in one basket, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and he said, I just had a couple eggs, really big eggs, in one big basket. And he goes, if something happens, like, you're in trouble. So it's, you know, that meant a lot to me when he said that.
Yeah, that seems to be like one of the secrets, I think, as far as like, I know, like playing music, or probably even doing, I don't know exactly how you do what you do, like, but my wife does crochet and things like that or whatever. So it's like you learn one little pattern, you learn one little loop, and then okay, and then you do it over and over, and then you learn a new loop.
Yeah.
Then you add those two loops together, like, whoa, this is actually kind of intricate. Then you add, then you learn a third loop, and you start the same thing with the guitar or bass. You learn a couple of notes, you learn how to do a scale, you know, and then you get to add on a couple of notes. And, yeah, and the next thing you know, you're doing, and people are like, man, he's doing all this. No, he's doing a bunch of little bitty things.
Yeah, exactly.
He's doing the little loops. They're just, you know, they're little things that he just strung them all together. And now it seems like this one big thing, but it's like the tube sock, you know, it's all these little bitty loops,
right,
you know.
Right. And that's why I think some people get discouraged, especially in this trade, or I'm sure music too. Like they don't see themselves progressing, you know. And it's like, well, what am I doing wrong? You know, it's like, no, it takes time. You know, I mean, they said Chet Atkins was on the road one time with like I think like Marty Stewart and I can't remember his name, like very accomplished guitar players. Uh-huh. They were on the road, and they were, like, out having dinner or something, you know. They were on the road. They'd gotten to the city that they were going to play in, and, like, they get back to the hotel room or whatever, but Chet wasn't with them. And, like, Chet called one of the guys on the phone. He's like, hey, I just got this, like, cool little thing on his guitar. He was practicing. Like, this is one of the most recognized master guitar players in the world. And he is in his hotel room practicing while these other guys are
eating dinner
or whatever, and he got a phone call from him, you know. He's like, it hit him. He's like, oh my goodness, like, this is why he's so good. Because
mm-hmm.
I mean, he never quit practicing.
Well, and that's part of it too, right? So you can have talent and you can get out there and show people that they're your talent, but if you don't have a hustle, you're probably not gonna get very far. You really got to work it.
That's scary sometimes.
You know, also the practicing too, I think, is part of the hustle. You know?
Yeah, totally.
And so,
just thinking about some of the jobs I got to do make me like almost make you want to shrink. But then I like being forced actually to like crank out stuff. Happen. We got a huge project coming up in September, and I'm like you said, it's just doing the same thing over and over. But I got to do it over and over a lot, you know. But
so it's not always just like a single order, like. I mean, a lot of times somebody will come in and be like, oh, that's a cool vest or jacket or hat, and I'll get it. But people that come in here like a business that'll order like a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, right. Like we did 3,000 wristbands one time for like Jameson whiskey. Wow. We did it through the PR company named Wheelhouse. You know, hit us up for that order. And they wanted just like leather wristband. They're very simple, you know. They weren't horrible to make or anything, but
still, there's 3,000 of them.
Still, 3,000 of them. You know, it's like all hands on deck for like 2 days, 3 days, 4 days straight.
How big of a staff do you have?
Oh, like I have one lady that I always depend on, and two or three kids that I can sometimes depend on. Uh-huh. So in our shop, it's all part time, you know. And I try to find people that are flexible. Because our business is sporadic, you know. Like, we might have a month where just, man, we just got a lot of orders on the books. And then some weeks, month goes by, and, like, the phone just ain't ringing as much. And so when we do, like, small-scale manufacturing and the retail, like, you have to be flexible. So, you know, all my employees, like, if we work more, we work more. If it's not as busy, we're not going to work as much this week.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I can control the overhead. At our old shop, we were doing more sales, but we had bigger overhead, you know, and it was actually a lot more moving parts that made it pretty frustrating, because I had to have a couple full-time employees just to run the shop, but it wasn't, it's not all it's cracked up to be, you know, just because you're running big numbers, you got big numbers coming in, big numbers going out, and so that's stressful.
No, I am jealous. I work for the man, and I think one of the biggest American dreams is to be a business owner. You can't just do this anywhere in the world. No. You can't just have an idea
few places where you can
Where you can do this.
Yeah,
you know, where you can come and just make a shop and start selling things You know, I think it's cool, and I think there's a certain freedom to being your own boss. You still got to talk to the banks, and you got the electric company, and all these kind of people that you got to IRS and all that stuff. But still, you got
a better chance here.
Yeah.
You know, than a lot of places, and
but you walk in like, this is mine.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I'm doing. This is my life. This is what I do. It's cool. Where I go, I'm like, I'm clocking in for the man. Whatever, a big corporation.
Well, even if you work for the man, I think it's important that you feel like your work is appreciated. And I think that's like the worst thing in the world, to do a job and not be appreciated.
No, I think you're right. See, I work in the service industry. Well, not the service industry, because I'm not a waiter, but I'm a courier, so I deliver packages all day long.
Yeah.
People are happy to see me because they're like, hey, my thing's here.
Yeah.
So I do feel appreciated
that
work.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's better than being like, you know, like the repo guy. That job would suck.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's happy to see you.
Everybody hates you.
You know, code compliance.
Luckily, that doesn't happen very much with our product, you know, but every once in a while it does. I mean, like, people, like, they're ordering on behalf of someone, you know, and they pick up their order and they're just like, yeah, I guess that's right. I guess that's good.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, you don't know how much work that actually took, you know. I mean, and I have to make sure, like, too, that people that work for me, that they feel, that they know, like, hey, you're doing some, like, awesome stuff here, you know. It's appreciated by the customers that come in. And I want them to see that and feel that, because, you know, talking about, like, working for the man, I mean, we don't all have to work for the man all the time. You know, I mean, you can always have a side gig. You can always do something.
This is me not working for the man. Of course, it doesn't pay anything.
Yeah, well, it often does. But you never know where it might end up.
You never know.
Yeah, because I, you know, a lot of times they talk about statistics are deceiving sometimes, you know, but they talk about, like, how, you know, the numbers about poor people, you know, or whatever. But they talk about poor people as a group, not actually flesh and blood people,
right?
You know, and those people a lot of times transition out of being poor. Yeah, more people are born and they might be poor for a while, but they also have a chance to transition out of that. And so there's always going to be, you're always going to have to work for somebody starting out. But, you know, maybe by the time you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s, you find something.
Yeah, I think it's never too late. Now, my wife is actually really good. She's, they do a lot of different things. I mean, she takes light bulbs and old ones and turns them upside down and makes ornaments out of them.
Yeah.
You know, or she'll take gourds and she cuts them and makes all different types of stuff. And her and her sister were doing together, and they made a bunch of stuff last year, went out to Artsgoggle, and they did a couple other things and sold everything within like two or three shows. Oh, they sold everything. So they've been spending all year since then making, they have just stacks. I mean, she made these really cool, I mean, she made flamingos out of, you know, gourds and like chickens and stuff out of these gourds and all different kinds of neat little, it's all kinds of craft stuff, but they have more stuff this year than they did last year. And they didn't know how to price it. They're like, I don't know. We don't want to say it's worth $30. And they're like, $30. But then again, you know, I don't want to say it's $5. And they're like, well, this is crap. I don't want that. You know, because there's that weird price point where it's like, it can't be too cheap because then they think there's no value in it.
Right, right.
But you can't overprice it either.
Yeah.
You know, and so they had to, I mean, I think they probably gave more stuff away than they actually sold, but they sold everything and made, you know, I made some money, went out, bought some more paint, bought some more gourds, and you know, bought some little Dremels and saws and stuff to cut and everything.
I think it's awesome how, like, all these jobs get filled in life, you know, and somebody can produce a product that you think has, that's never been done before, never, and there's a market for it. And it just, I always find it interesting, like, every, you know, like a barbershops, for instance. I mean, I can't conceive, you know, growing up and thinking, I want to cut people's hair. Yet there are people in the world, almost like they were born for it.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
almost miraculous to me, and I think it's just cool. Like, all these jobs get filled. You know, like every kind. It's like, well, who does that? Well, somebody does that, you know? I mean, just look around you. Like, somebody made that shirt. Somebody painted that wall. Somebody, you know, and it all works. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I think that's cool. No, but I can see she often talks about, you know, that she wishes she didn't have to work her full-time job and could just do this, you know.
Yeah.
And my daughter got into the scene last year, too. She started making, all the kids were into slime. You remember the slime craze or whatever?
Yeah.
So she made Well, no, it's not the stuff. It's like this. It's in a little. It's almost like Silly Putty.
Oh yeah.
But it's grosser. It's more like snotty, that really kind of texture. But you can make it put like little beads and stuff in there, and these kids would just stick their finger in. It's just to. It's kind of like the fidget spinner. It's just something for them to mess with. But she made a bunch of it because you can make it out of borax and some other things. And she made tubs and tubs of them and took them out there. And just was, kids were going, Mom, 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 Mom. And she was just selling them and selling them. She was a hit. She sold all of her stuff, made like $60 that day. And it was stuff that she made, you know, like 12 or whatever.
That's satisfying.
I think it's cool. You know, I'm one of those weird people where I was like, I interpret the Bible as far as like when God created man in his image, it means that God made creators. That's why we create.
Oh, yeah,
you know, we make music and songs and tables and shirts and
we can't not do it.
Yeah. You know, we make everything that you see that's not trees or grass, you know, everything is made, you know. We did that as a human race.
It's kind of
cool. And it's like I think it's a Joe Rogan thing where he's like, if everything crashed out right now, you know, and there's only like 10% of the population left, he's like, which one of you got, how long will it take us to get back to the cell phone? You know, because it's like, I don't know how that thing works. I don't know how a fax machine works.
Like,
with it,
like
you know,
the radio. Like, I didn't know the radio works.
You know, it would take us another 1,000 years to get back where we are now if we were just told.
I could figure out the grist mill, you know, or the water wheel. I could do that, I guess, you know, maybe.
Yeah, like I said, I could catch a fish and clean it and eat it and make a lean-to. I'd survive for a little while.
Yeah.
Once winter came, I'd probably be like, it's over.
It's over.
Yeah. All right. Well, man, you have a really cool shop. I encourage anybody to come down here. It's right past Vickery off 35. And
yeah. I tell people, right, we're basically at Vickery, where Vickery meets I-35.
Mm-hmm.
But I also tell people, like, if you take Rosedale, and if you're going south, you can make a U-turn on Rosedale, or you can exit Rosedale if you're going north and just stay on the service road. That's really the easiest way to get here.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people see this building, and they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen that building. Have no idea how to get here. It's actually very accessible, but
you just
have to know which street to take.
No, we came from the south, so we exited Lancaster and just did the UE under the bridge.
Oh, yeah, you could do that.
Access road, which is super easy, too.
Yeah.
You'll see the OB Macaroni sign outside, and you'll know that's the building, and then you'll see a really cool little neon sign. Who made that?
Don Smith Signs, the guy who actually does all of our hand-painted signs, he can do sheet metal fab, too. I mean, that's not his main gig, but he's been doing sign work for so long that it just, he does a lot of different things.
I like that. Please no Dallasites.
Yeah, I was going to point that thing, too.
So we had the sign, like, I kind of drew up some designs, but we actually sent the design off to get, like, officially drawn up, you know, just so it'd be all legit. And then Don took that, he did the paint, he did the, you know, built the sign, and then took it to a neon guy to install the neon. So it was really a great way to get that done.
Looks
and
good.
And done locally. But we're having to figure out something with the city to actually get it hung. Because they're not letting us, but it's cool. It's a great building. This building works so much better for us than where we were. It communicates a lot for us.
It's cool, and I love that you love the city and want to, you know, serve the city with your talents. This is, you know, what you
do. Yeah, I don't think I could ever move out of Fort Worth. Yeah. It's like my dad's from here, my grandfather, my great-grandfather.
I think about moving to a small town out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But that's the cool thing about this city is that you can have a big city and you have your museum and there's sports as far as baseball and football. There's zoos. There's places to fish. I mean, everything you want here. But it's also, it feels like a small town.
Yeah.
You have places
it's like
this.
It's the biggest small town ever.
I mean, there's small town cafes where Flo is still working, you know, and waiting on you, honey, bless your heart, and all that stuff, and have some... my biscuits and gravy and all that. It's all still around. It just feels like it's, you know. But then you can have the big city hustle bustle, too, if you look for it. It's here, you know, the nightlife and all that kind of stuff.
If you ever lived in another city, it makes you appreciate Fort Worth more, I think. Yeah. I mean, a lot of kids that I knew, you know, in high school, I can't wait to get out of this town.
Yeah,
it's so
course.
Boring. So, you know, like 10 years later, it's like, hey, you're back.
I love this town. It's the greatest town.
This is great, yeah. I was like, Because, and I mean, all part of that's just what you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
the grass is always greener.
Oh yeah,
you gotta get out there and check it out.
No, I like Fort Worth. I think I went to I traveled to Peru, and there's a city in the north called Trujillo, and it's on the coast, and it actually reminds me a lot of Fort Worth.
Really?
It's about the same size, but you don't get the same feeling as you get in the real big cities, and the people there are so friendly. So you know, and hey, this is like a developing country. It's not, you know, not super great compared to our standards. And those people had so much pride in their city. You know, it's like, this is our city. This is what we got.
Yeah.
You know, they're not blind as to its issues, right?
Sure.
But they just had a pride.
It's
you
theirs.
Know, it's theirs. This, yeah. It's ours, you know. And I know it's not, doesn't have this or that. But, I mean, and that made me really appreciate Fort Worth even more. I'm like, I'm going to be proud of this city. I'm not going to deny its issues or whatever, this or that, you know, and I think that's...
just try to make it a little better, you know?
Yeah, just, I mean, like, let's... Because when you have pride in something, then you'll work on it.
Yeah, you want to make it better. You want to, you know, you want to keep the floors clean and the windows washed.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I think you ought to have the Pledge of Allegiance in the classroom.
They still
do.
My kids started kindergarten this year, and I give them there as 7:40, and they all stand up and do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Nobody's saying there's not problems. We're saying that this is a great place. Let's work on it. Let's make it better, you know? And so I feel.
Yeah, that's what I think it's supposed to be. I think it's about always trying to improve. You can improve your business. You can improve your town. You can improve yourself.
Yeah.
You know, improve your marriage. There's always something that you can work on to make yourself better. I don't know. This is like, that's kind of a lesson I've been dealing with, you know, lately. Because I've been kind of like, yeah, everything is going pretty good right now. And I start thinking, look, you could do this better. You could do this better.
Yeah.
You could, you know, and it's not that I'm beating myself up, but it's like, you don't need to be lazy and complacent. You just got to keep
trying to be better. Me personally, I mean, people think that I'm a little bit of a pessimist when I talk about certain things or whatever, but it really, and this is me personally, I'm not saying, not projecting this on other people, but pessimism is my way of like bettering things. You know, I have to see the problem. You know, if you always go around thinking the glass is half full, then you'll be satisfied with it. Yeah. But if you see the glass is half empty, you'll be like, get some water. Get some water over here and fill this thing up. So me, I mean, I
can't argue with that point.
I'm a little bit critical. But it's only a means of improvement, you know. I'm not like a Debbie Downer, but just like, hey, you know, let's see what the issues are here, because there's always a problem to be solved, you know. Everybody would readily say, like, nothing's perfect,
right?
So there's room for improvement.
Right, always.
Yeah.
For me, it was really cool to hang out with you.
Oh, I appreciate you coming by.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt Cliff, reached out to me. It was like, hey, I don't know if you ever had
he's great.
To write on, but you should have him on. He's, you know, super nice guy. I was like, man, we had him on for like a minute at an art school. We hit a bunch of people. And I was like, so I'll do that. And it took us several months to get over here. You know?
No, that's great. That's cool. I'm glad you're
Matt
doing this.
Is real cool.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody's doing what y'all are doing. I mean, I think it's important that
we enjoy
all avenues.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we talk to musicians most of the time, but I like to do these little offshoots where we kind of... Because it's supposed to be about the city.
Right,
and about locals who are doing things and making things and, you know, making the city better. And, you know, and so this is just like... I mean, this is your art, you know.
I appreciate it. I'm glad that you think I'm making the city better.
Yeah, of course, man. A little place like this is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll keep doing it as long as people like it. Like, it's a 20-year cycle. People think it's cool now, but maybe they won't later. I'll still be doing it, though. You know?
Yeah. I don't know. There are some things that are classic that are always cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, like, those little Betty Boop signs and I Love Lucy's posters, whatever, all that stuff, always sells. It doesn't matter what year it is. Somebody's going to buy it.
That's
maybe
true.
It's somebody's grandmother or whatever, but somebody's going to... It's just, there's some things, you know, blue jeans and T-shirts are... Even in the 50s, guys are wearing white T-shirts and blue jeans. I mean, there's just blue jeans and T-shirts are always going to be. There's some things that, you know, and it's like, it seems like that you've picked out the, you know, I like that hats have kind of made a comeback, you know.
I hope so.
But but I think Fort Worth is kind of a hat city anyways. Mostly cowboy hats, but you see a lot more of the short brims and things like that.
That's something we try to promote too. Like, wear your hat.
Yeah.
And not just casually wear it, like if it matches your outfit. Put the hat on every day.
I could have done that, man, if I had the money to just buy all the different kind of derbies and the little looser boy hats and all that different kind of stuff. I've got three or four. So I wear my black hat when I wear, you know, my black shoes, and I wear my brown hat when I have on like earth tones. So
I lost my good baseball cap. My good black, solid black color baseball cap I like to wear when I'm feeling normal.
Yeah.
I lost it. It's
so now you can feel normal.
Yeah, and I got this I'm really glad I got this unchin hat.
Yeah.
But I feel like a kind of a skater kid. Skater guy. I'm not a kid. I'm 27.
But now that black hat's out there somewhere.
Yeah, it's somewhere.
Making somebody else
feel normal. Yeah, I mean, it's still normal right now.
Hope some other 26-year-old found it. Is like, I'm going to be an adult today. Yeah. So, Cutthroat Finches?
Yeah, that's what we're going to close out with. It's that song, Ideology Ends. Like a couple of their songs are, they're not political. They're about... They're political without being political. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, this nonsense. We need to stop this ideology. You know, I think is kind of what the gist was when I listened to it. But I liked it. And I know that was one of the bands you said, you know, would be cool to play.
Yeah,
Sean Russell. Yeah, he is cool. And their band is really good. Yeah. I think I saw him the other night. Was he there the other night?
I forget.
Anyways. It was good meeting you.
Yeah, nice to meet you,
great
man.
Great store. So, all right.
All right, good night.
Bye, everybody.
See ya. Three seconds.